Hello and welcome to the latest Bruin podcast. This week we'll be talking all things Japan. First up, we'll be covering it from a macro angle with our own head of research, Guy Foster, before going to a bottom-up view with a couple of investors, Matt Brett from Bailey Gifford and Andrew Rose from Schroder Tokyo. Here's a quick snippet of Guy's current views on the market.
I mean, we are quite positive on Japanese stocks, and it's a sort of dangerous game in a sense because there have been so many false dawns.
So for more on the macro view from Guy, as well as the investment view from our managers Matt Brett and Andrew Rose, please listen on. But first up, our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Bruin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello and welcome to the latest Bruin podcast. My name's Michael Poole, and today we are covering the Japanese equity market from a number of different angles. Later in the podcast, I've got a few of our preferred managers in this space, Matt Brett of Bailey Gifford and Andrew Rose of Schroder Tokyo, to discuss the bottom-up ideas they're seeing in the market today. But first up, I'm going to bring in our own head of research, Guy Foster, to discuss our current macro thinking on the market. So Guy, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Mike.
Could you begin by maybe talking about, there's a lot of buzz around the market at the moment. Why such a positive view on Japan now?
Well, I think the returns have been pretty good. And so, as is often the case, you get a certain amount of post-rationalisation of strong returns. But also, there has been a story about Japanese prospective returns, which has existed for a long time, most notably since 2013 Abenomics. And there was a story about corporate reform, which was in itself a kind of refresh, a rewarming of a story about corporate reform, which goes right back to the Koizumi era of the early 2000s. And so the story here is obviously, I think most people would be quite well versed in it, but Japanese companies went from being the sort of shining light of this is how you should run a company to being this is exactly how you shouldn't allocate capital, particularly in corporate structures, building up cross shareholdings and not targeting this sort of fabled return on equity metric, which is the ultimate driver of shareholder values for investors. And so there have been various things, excuse me, that have taken place over the years under particularly those two reforming prime ministers. And you know, once you start, when you start seeing returns from the market coming through, then it's natural, I think, that people look at that and say, oh, well, it, at last, the improvement is finally coming.
So what is our view on that narrative? Is that why perhaps we'd be more positive on the market at the moment?
Well, look, I mean, we are quite positive on Japanese stocks, and it's a sort of dangerous game in a sense because there have been so many false dawns. But what we do is we really kind of look through what is the driver of returns. Normally, the driver of returns of sustainable equity market returns is earnings on a sort of common currency basis. And Japanese earnings have been pretty good. So it's natural, like there hasn't been a great improvement in, say, like the bare facts, say the terrible demographics or anything like that. So it must be that they're doing something differently. But what you can see actually is that the revenue has been pretty good. So that's a good story. It's probably something to do with the location of Japan in Asia, a very fast growing part of the world, but one which will not on a common currency basis contribute so much in 2018, but also those revenues are translating much more cleanly into profits. And that's where I think people will find a great deal of sympathy for this bull case, but we're just a little bit more sceptical than most. And the specific reason is that it's not really revenue turning into operating profit. That's still taking place at the same rates, that got the same operating margins. But it's specifically the after-tax margins. And so what you will be aware of is that we have seen a tranche or a series of tranches of corporation tax cuts in Japan since Abenomics was introduced. And what that's resulting in is simply a higher passage of revenue turning into after-tax profit. And that's why you're seeing so much better equity returns. The two things, the better revenue and the lower corporate tax rate.
Okay, and so still a positive story, but we've got a slight amount of skepticism on some of that narrative. The other bullish argument that people often point to is the valuations in Japan and how they're that much lower than the rest of the world. What's our thinking on valuations there?
We think they're right. I mean, purely and simply, you look at a number of metrics and you find that Japanese valuations, excuse me, having been for a long time very, very high in relation to the rest of the world, and we're only really talking a few years ago here, we're not talking about the early 90s when they were obviously at absolutely absurd levels. No, valuations have really come back to much more affordable levels, and we look at them on a number of bases. So straightforward price earnings, price to book, they look attractive. Price to books look attractive for a long time. Even on a cyclically adjusted basis, Japanese stocks, they look perfectly good value, certainly compared to the rest of the world. And what they look particularly attractive in is on an EV to EBITDA basis. So the reason for that is that Japanese companies have been paying off a huge amount of their debt, basically on average all of it, at a time when most other regions have been either gearing up to some extent. So that's interesting both for the bulls and the skeptics, because it does mean, I think, that Japanese companies with much less leverage just still generating good net income growth, that's quite a difficult trick to pull off. So it's impressive that they're managing it, albeit with this tax tailwind. Whereas, however, the slight anomaly about this is that in this sort of brave new world of Japanese companies seeking growth and profitability, doesn't make a great deal of sense for them to take all of the gearing out of their balance sheets at a time when interest rates are still absolutely rock bottom levels. So it does imply that there is a sort of dearth of animal spirit or even ultimate demand that is still afflicting this market.
Okay, and as a final question, I think we'd be amiss if we didn't cover off the currency. It's always been macro investors would say you have to look at the currency when investing in Japan. It would be a big driver for their views on the market. What's our kind of current thinking behind that and also our views on the yen?
Yeah, I mean, I think the yen will remain a defensive currency. Historically, you've had quite a cyclical market, a cyclical stock market within a defensive currency, which has made it sort of a bit complicated to work out whether the market's overall going to be a defensive investment for a UK-based investor. I mean, my suspicion is that it retains those risk-off qualities, but that the negative correlation with the Japanese equity market goes down a bit as that cyclicality and the gearing of the underlying stocks has diminished. Now, obviously, what we've seen over the last year is the first signs, really, that the Bank of Japan can't just keep printing and printing money. So, again, that's sort of something which might... Well, which some people might consider a bull case, that they have this very loose monetary policy. But frankly, the only way is tighter, really, in terms of that policy, given where it is at the moment. So you need to be prepared for that. That probably manifests itself in a higher yen, and any other region historically, it would be the case that a higher currency, stronger local currency gives the sterling investor better returns. That hasn't historically been the case for Japan, but we think it might be different this time. Famous last words.
So with that macro view in mind, I met with a couple of our preferred equity investors in the region to get their bottom-up view on the market. First up was Matt Brett, fund manager on a number of Baillie Gifford's Japanese product range. Firmly in the growth-orientated investor camp, here's what Matt had to say and some of the specific areas that were interesting him at the moment. Matthew, thanks for being with us. Could you maybe just quickly outline the opportunities you see as a growth investor in Japan at the moment?
Thank you. Yeah, I think there's a number of very exciting opportunities in Japan at the moment in terms of long-term secular growth. The internet is an area that we have a lot of exposure to in our portfolios. Roughly a quarter of the portfolios are in disruptive internet businesses of various types. And I think for us, it still feels like we're at the relatively early stage of the internet and the opportunity for those businesses. So we've seen businesses such as Rakuten and the recently renamed Zozo operating in e-commerce, or businesses such as SBI, which is a very successful online brokerage in Japan. And finally, we have more global opportunities like SoftBank, which invests in businesses such as Alibaba and others. So that's one big area of opportunity for us. Another big area of opportunity has been robotics and factory automation. And I think it's fair to say that when people think about getting robots, they really go only to two countries. They go to Germany or they go to Japan. And so the opportunities for Japanese businesses as robotics pushes out of being something just used by the car and the electronics industry into everyday life are really very large indeed. So we've got holdings there in things like Fanuc and Yaskawa and various other stocks which we are excited about.
And we know this has been quite a good time to be a growth investor in Japan. Its style's been in favour. How do you kind of see that in this kind of investment cycle? Do we think there's still that opportunity going forward?
Well, I think one of the important things to think about is in which direction is the world actually changing? And I think, yes, a number of these stocks have done well. But in our view, the substantial reason why they've done well is because the earnings in those businesses have grown a lot. And looking forward, we see continued opportunity for those businesses. And particularly on the internet side, we're not at all concerned by the valuations that we're being asked to pay for those in Japan. For some reason, Japanese internet businesses seem to trade on lower multiples than in some parts of the world. And yet we think there are significant opportunities for those businesses. On the factory automation side, we do have to be aware that these are also cyclical businesses. But again, when we look forward in the long term, we think that the internet in many ways is ahead of factory automation. And so the growth in the automation could be even greater than the internet over the next 10 years or so. So I think, we still continue to think there's good opportunities here.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for that background, Matt.
Thank you.
Next up, I met with Andrew Rose to get a value investor's perspective. Andrew manages the Schroder Tokyo Fund and has covered the market for over 30 years. Here are his views on the current dynamics. I just wanted to ask about the opportunities you're seeing in the Japan market, kind of as coming from the perspective of a value investor.
Yeah, sure. As you probably mentioned previously, I mean, Japan valuations are attractive, and therefore not surprisingly that there are parts of the market which offer particularly attractive value. Over a long period of time, value has been the right place to be in Japan. That's not been the case recently. There's been more of a focus on a select group of quality growth names which have done very well and become slightly crowded. And the mirror image of that is it's a large part of the market which is trading at historically low valuations. So the sort of gap between growth and value valuations are currently now quite interesting. And therefore, we are finding a lot of opportunities in what might be described as sort of value parts of the market, and not necessarily balance sheet value, but also earnings-based
So what are those parts of the market that you refer to where you see particular?
I mean, certainly some of the, well, so it, by and large, is slightly cyclical. So I would say some of the car companies, car related, some of the financials, some machinery names, but also domestic cyclicals like property and construction, and that they have been to a large extent ignored, and therefore look quite interesting.
And so is it, I mean, you've been in the industry for a while. Yeah. Is it possible to quantify the kind of amount of dispersion or opportunity that you're seeing at the moment from your kind of value perspective?
I mean, I'm not saying quantify, but if you do, you know, value versus the market, or if you look at dispersion of, say, price to book, dispersion from the mean, they are, I mean, not quite at the level of, say, 2000, which was very extreme in favour of after the dot-com. But it's getting up there. So it's one of the wider range of dispersions that I've seen in my 30 plus years in the industry.
Okay. And some of those sectors you mentioned, I mean, I'll say, take autos, for instance. Yeah. That seems quite reliant on a view on the currency. Is that the case? And kind of what is your view on the currency?
It's not just a view on, I mean, certainly the currency does impact those companies. So I'm clearly assuming we don't have a global recession, that we don't have a surge in the yen. I think if that were the case, then the earnings of those companies would suffer, but the balance sheet value would probably still be there. Japanese companies are, by and large, aggregate cash rich. They're trading at low multiples of book, low multiples of tangible book. So the earnings would suffer from a rise in the currency, but the balance sheet value would still be there. But as I say, I think it does require, well, it does imply that we don't have a serious global recession, we don't have a surge in the currency.
Okay, so excluding that possibility, you're quite positive on the opportunity that you're seeing in the market at the moment then?
Yes, I am, yes. I think it feels, as I say, the skew in the market's been the opposite direction, and I think, you know, there are some signs that it could now be changing.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, that's all we've got time for on this week's podcast. To our listeners, thanks very much for listening. Hopefully you found that useful for an overview of the Japanese market from a number of perspectives. First up, macro, and then from our growth-orientated and value-orientated investors. If you do have any feedback, please leave it on Twitter using the hashtag BruinPodcast, or leave a review on iTunes, SoundCloud, whoever you listen to the podcast today. But for now, thanks very much for listening. We look forward to bringing you our next podcast next week.